just sort of a be careful kind of a trend.
I mean, my guess, you know, would be, I don't think there's any reason to believe it would change adequacy. I don't think there's any, again, part of the thing we're looking into isn't built on a suspicion that an independent versus an employee, one is better than the other in terms of adequacy, as much as are there issues in actuarial practice that need to be, we need to be concerned with, and do those vary by those organizations, by those different employment situations of that person. So I don't think there's any reason to believe that it would change adequacy per se, but it's an independent consultant, you know. Give us the list of those people.
I'm sorry, Chuck. Can you hear us back there? Not a problem. Good. Other comments, questions, please?
Yeah. One of the things is it does seem that we may have done a poor job of talking a lot about the actual volatility of things. And I think that in a lot of ways I see that as the more important thing that we need to improve, because I don't know that we've done anything to prepare the public for just the normal deviations, you know, not just the risk of some material, but, you know, what is the normal fluctuation. I think we spend a lot of time, because we think the outside public can't handle it, trying to convince them that, well, if we just do this right, the reserves will be stable and insurance, you know, and risk will just be diversified away, and we're not going to have all these warnings. I think that is a bad perception, that is, by not doing enough to talk about the fact that what we do has risk around it, we've set ourselves up for a lot of the comments that we're getting back.
Yeah, I think that definitely more can be done there. And one of the problems is, you know, you have to put down a number. You can't say your earnings are about from here to here, you know. So you back up and you have to come back and come up with a loss reserve estimate. And it's always a point, okay? And we all know the odds are a million to one or higher or whatever it is that we're gonna get that anywhere near that close. So, you know, being able to communicate to people and maybe something having ranges in there or whatever, you know, that there's uncertainty in here. There's a lot of things that you can't be sure. We're not prophets, okay? We're not, you know, seers. We can't see the future. So, you know, that's definitely part of the effort. But having some of the tools and putting things together, I think, is part of that, you know. And being able to do it in a non-technical fashion so that people really, oh, yeah, you know, that makes sense. And then maybe we wouldn't be sued as much, too. Oh, I thought maybe you
were.
Well,
I was going to add just briefly, you know, to that. There's a very different degree of precision necessary. Let me put it this way. When you're talking about regulation and you publish a range of reserves to support an opinion, a regulator might, in some cases, think that's okay. In some cases, they might say, gee, that range is too wide. If you're talking about an earnings analyst, it's always going to be too wide. They require a much higher degree of precision to do earnings, because it has a much more significant impact on earnings and valuations than anything you would do in a regulatory context. But again, that regulatory document is all they've got to go with. And when we start publishing ranges to support this, it's only going to make them pull their hair out more. Because they require such precision. That precision, our opinions, our reserves were never intended to try to get to. I think it could only make the thing worse when you get to the people really looking at a stream of earnings.
But aren't we giving them false expectations if we say, well, they can demand it all they want, but there are some of the things that happen that are just, you know, we're talking about the payment on losses that are going to happen over years and years. We can only do so much to get, you know, we should always try to get the best product, but it's still going to happen. This is an estimate, and I think that if we don't do something to encourage and get them to know that all of us, you know, the best actuary can't get the right answer exactly to, you know, what's going to come into so many cents per share, you know, I think that if we don't let them know that, even if that's hard for them to hear and pull their hair out, they're going to pull their hair out more when we try to tell them after the fact that, no, that was a reasonable movement in the reserve that occurred, you know, after the fact.
Yeah.
Nothing to lay the groundwork ahead of time to say these things are very hard to estimate.
If they follow the industry, you know, they know what the issues are, and they'll press for the, you know, give us a tighter answer, a tighter range, give us a point, or this or that. But the reality is, if they've been following the industry for years, I'm sure they understand the uncertainties.
So. I think that was one of the recommendations in the credibility task force was to get out there and have these type of seminars with the financial audience and let them know just how volatile these things are. But you have to be careful how far you go in terms of like, you know, this stuff is, no one knows what this is. You know, we don't want to take away any of our credibility at all. I mean, we do okay. So, but you're right, we definitely have to get it out there to the audience of what their expectations are.
There's one thing, you know, I would like to see somewhere in the at the CAS level, academy level, I'm not exactly sure what the right place is, to get some sort of a standard nomenclature. I was really sort of struck yesterday with this, the appearance of the word best estimate. And, you know, and I go around and I try to ask, what is a best estimate? And I don't get the same answer from the same people. And also, what is a reasonable range? Whenever I hear the word reasonable, I cringe. And if you could come up with a standard nomenclature as to what these mean, and, you know, just get a bunch of people in a room, that would, I think, be in the long run right there. I can appreciate it might cause some, you know, to pin you down might be a short, cause some short run difficulties, just like the, comment back there. But I think that's something that you could really do that would help in the long run.
Codify this.
If you tell me what it means.
I thought I made a big contribution when I got the committee to substitute reasonable for good and sufficient.
What did you mean by that?
This is what's going to go on for a long time.
Instead, you had a roulette wheel numbered 0 to 200, 0, 1 up to 200, and it's a fair wheel, it's a symmetric wheel. The process in the roulette wheel is very different to the process in the coin. Imagine what mistakes you would make if you used the coin model for the roulette wheel. And we've all been to casinos, and we know the difference. That's the kind of difference you actually get between the ratios and what's going on in the data, okay? There's a lot of myth generated by this ratio paradigm. What we actually need is a paradigm shift, which is a complete breakaway from traditional thought, complete breakaway. And you start thinking about the problems differently, and you get a very different understanding of the issues. Just like there was a huge paradigm shift, and this is where you might burn it, from bloodletting in medicine to modern medicine. You can't improve bloodletting by saying, I'm going to do it in a different way or use a different approach of bloodletting. You've got to cross the bridge into a new paradigm, and you get a much better understanding of the problem. Thank you.
education of some of the people in business was from the CEO, no, CFO of a life company that was parent to a property manager to the insurance. And one day his plea was just, give me a reserve number I can pull that I'll never have to add to, and I'll book it. Now, when you talk about trying to educate board of directors, many of whom are CEOs, charitable foundations, now you're talking about more explanation.
Thank you. And when you start talking about trying to educate the public, we just have a lot of communication to do.
I like some of the blame here at Wall Street. Wall Street, by its very nature,
Wall Street, by its very nature, has a tendency to demand smooth earnings. They love stories that they can say it's going to grow at this rate. And they apply the simple constant growth rate model, which produces certain predictions for what your price to earnings should be, what your price to book should be, and then the sell side analysts come along and say, that's what your valuation should be. But in almost every industry, not just property casualty and not just long tail property casualty, the results actually occur in lumpy fashions if you really looked through them. And managements then face this and they go, well, wait a minute. The sell side analysts are saying we have to earn X. And this is what creates initially the deviation. And then the management gives into it rather than, most of the managements that I own shares in are the ones that say to the sell side analysts, sorry guys, we're actually going to miss your estimates every now and then. And that's part of our risk control process. Not many will do that. But that's part of the way that I do it because I look for ethical managements, honest managements, conservative managements. And in different parts of the cycle, I'll try to underwrite what managements are doing. Now, this isn't just a problem with long-tail commercial lines companies. This is a problem with the global investment banks and the large-scale money center banks. Because who can audit their swap books? Who knows what risks are really going on in their swap books? And as one of them confessed to me once, if we find someone that can audit our swap books, we hire them because they'll earn 10 times more with us. So much as I would love to see greater reserve transparency coming through the long tail line companies, I understand the fundamental variability of it, and I end up saying it can't get all that much better. The only thing that I could ask for on the part of managements is that they try to be unbiased. Because we can talk about the reserves missing one way and another, and if it was always on average accurate, I don't think we'd have the issue. It's that managements have a tendency to set their loss picks low on average in order to make earnings estimates, and that's what leads to the problem.
Can I follow up on that?
Sure.
Just wondering whether either the CAS or the...
Wondering whether the CAS or the Academy has ever sort of studied reserve adequacy by stock versus mutual, if that is a true statement? Or is that something you could?
I guess we could look at that.
Could do it, I guess. Just be a matter of flagging another field in the data. So yeah, it would be interesting to see over time. I'd imagine you'd have to look at obviously different time periods. You'd have different expectations about different time periods is what I would try to say.
I have this recollection of us at ISO maybe taking a look at that before, though not recently. Okay, we'll have to dig back into it, take a look.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's a good question. I mean, slicing and dicing maybe many different ways, maybe there's some things that we could come across. And that's actually what Chuck and Tom were trying to do. But yeah, more suggestions on other ways, other slicing and dicing would be better, would be good. Yeah, the earnings thing, that's such a toughie. The market rewards companies that have high earnings and very stable. They pay a premium for that. I'm trying to stick with this. Other comments, questions, please, suggestions?
I do think, though, that we can't point a lot of the blame.
Or it's not fair to continue to expect to get the rewards that go along with what we ask, just to be, we ask for the finger to be pointed to us and get the credit for being the loss reserving people, those who signed the actuarial opinion. And there's a lot of ways that we've all, you know, benefited from that. We can't then turn around and then also say, no, because it was the pricing, it was, you know, Wall Street made me do it. In the end, all of these things come back down to, no matter what we change about things, is I think we really do have to make a choice. Do we want to be the ones who say it? And if we don't like the answers or we don't like the pressures we're getting, how are we going to respond to that? And I think that's also a thing that we should talk about as a group. What is it we can do to make it, if we need more support somehow through some function, to make sure that if you think the answer that you're being told to support is not right, that you can stand up for what you really believe.
Any other comments, questions? Last call. Thank you very much for attending.
Good to see you, Josh.
Yes,
sir. Good to
see you. Hold up,
watching on TV.
Yeah, right, okay.
We go with the leprechaun album.
Yeah, that's me. Yes.
The study you were doing there is basically what we saw in your presentation.
What's that?
Did
you get lunch or are you getting lunch?
The question is my slides available?
Yeah, the slides are available, but is there any more than what's on the slide that's available?
Is there a database or something?
Good to see you. How you been?
Yeah,
what's going on?